This is a recording of Danny O.C. from San Jose, California, the afternoon speaker, held at the 6th Annual Delta Intergroup Spring Fest in Lodi, California, on May 1st, 1993. In observance with the 11th tradition stating anonymity at the public level, please keep this tape within the fellowship and observe the anonymity of all AA speakers.
My name is Daniel Kernberger, alcoholic. I want to thank Alcoholics Anonymous and rooms like this and God as I understand them for helping me not to take a fixed pill of drink since the time I got out of bed this morning. What happened was when I got out of bed this morning, I went right to the power and I asked God to please help me not take anything today to take care of the kid. And I read and prayed for a couple hours, and as a direct result of that, since I got out of bed this morning at about 4:30, which was late for me, because I was in the service last night, I haven't found it necessary to take anything, you know. And I want to get a frustration off my chest before, I kind of know a little bit about the framework of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I don't know what's inside me. I don't have a canned speech. I do a lot of these things, okay. My ego is full-blown right now, probably for about another 3 or 4 or 5 minutes. It will be until the message kicks in, and then pretty soon before you know it, it's 4:30, and we're on our way where we're supposed to be going. But what really pissed me off today, okay, and I got to let you know, in Lodi, California, I'll risk my friendship with you telling you the truth, is these people in here that wear the red badges, okay, and these people in here had everything to do with the setup of the tables and the chairs. The people in here, no matter what town they came from, who busted their ass outside this door here and set this thing up so I can come from San Jose, California, okay, and try to stay sober one more day. I'm going over here to the room of Al-Anon, okay, and everything's cooking. Everything is excellent, okay? And then I see these people behind the counter busting their ass, okay, cooking, all right? And I'm sitting there listening to Pamela share her experience, strength, and hope. And I'm saying, Jesus Christ, there's no air conditioning here. You know what I mean? So I got to let you know something about my character defect before I start. Okay? But when Pamela got through sharing, okay, about 3/4 of the people stood up and clapped for her. See? That pisses me off. See, when I get through talking, don't stand up and clap for me. God damn it. Just stand up and clap for the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what you stand up and... You praise these people that are behind the counter. See, people are fighting for their lives trying to stay sober. See? And I treasure it. I've been talking about it since the day I became an Alcoholics Anonymous. I've respected. This is how I was raised. If you don't hear anything else between now and 4:30, hear this. You can leave this room this afternoon, and you don't ever have to take another fixed pill of drink or any type of mood on mind altering chemical. I don't give a shit what you go through. See? I mean, that's it. There's no excuses or no reason to go back out and drink. No human being has ever came up to me in all the years that I've been sober and said, I went out and drank because of this. Or I went out and drank because of that. Because I'll tell them they're full of shit. See? I've been to the same funeral home 29 times since I became Alcoholics Anonymous. 14 in my immediate family. See? And I haven't found it necessary to take anything. And I treasure that. See, I treasure that. I come up here from San Jose, California today, okay, because I need you. You don't need me. Let's get that straight right now. I could talk about from until now until 4:30 what transpired my life from 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon till 5 o'clock this morning. Let me give you 5 minutes of it instead of boring you to death. A friend of mine called me yesterday and told me that there's a guy sitting over here in the hospital in Stockton, California. A guy that poured his guts, heart, mind, and soul out for thousands of hours, man. See, for my son, Kevin. When Kevin used to come to the Atlanta Club 6'3", 190 pounds, packing a gun, because he wanted to shoot his papa for what he did to his mom and his 7 brothers and sisters. Kevin called me this morning. He told me, Pops, you go up there to Lodi and cover Lodi with God as you understand him. His wife is kicking off the Cinco de Mayo Marathon on the east side in San Jose, California. Okay? And then afterwards, I got a phone call from two of the little finest girls that are breathing fresh air into their body. Okay? And one of them's 7, and the other one's 9. See, and they call me Grandpa. See, they've never seen their grandpa drink. And I hope and pray to God they never see their grandpa drink. But I'll back up to the phone call I got regarding a human being that's in a hospital. So I'm going to put the heat on people in Lodi, okay, and in Stockton, okay, because, see, I was planning all kinds of goodies today. God knows what I'm going to do after this meeting's over. I'm going to run back to the hotel. I'm going to jump in the swimming pool to calm my body down. So if you're looking for me, I'll be the little white whale either in the pool or in the jacuzzi. See? And then I'm going to make some phone calls, okay, and I'm going to see how my friend's doing. See? Because that's what I'm supposed to do. Okay? And they operated on him and they sewed him back up in about 5 minutes. He's got a chance. His name's Bobby Jakes. I'm not breaking his anonymity. See, I've treasured the old-timers since the day I became Alcoholics Anonymous. The long-timers. The people that have paved the way so this guy could come in here to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, weighing 518 pounds and my pants was held up by a rope. And I weighed 518 pounds. And I had wine sores all over my body. And I couldn't go to the bathroom from the front of the back. It was coming out all pores of my body. See? That ain't how I was when I was 11 or 12. Okay? That ain't what I was when I was 15, 16. When I signed a Major League Baseball contract with the Washington Senators, one of the youngest kids in the United States ever to play Major League Baseball, that ain't what how I was. See, I was born and raised in San Francisco, and I was born and raised to do two things. One, go to school and eat my lunch, and to play baseball. That's all I wanted to do. I want to let you know before I start into this thing, okay, that the only reason I became an alcoholic was because of alcohol. Had nothing to do with my mother, had nothing to do with my father, and had nothing to do with my inner child, it had nothing to do with sex syndrome and popularity of alcohol, whatever. It had to do with I drank too much goddamn alcohol. See, that's what happened to me. See, my mother didn't help me cross the line. My father didn't help me cross the line. Alcohol helped me cross the line. See? Alcohol. King alcohol. King John Barleycorn. I was born and raised in a mission district. I know what it is to be raised by the Jesuit priests and the Christian brothers and the daughters of charity and the sisters of the poor and shit. When I was 9 years old, they had a house meeting. In my house, you either a nun, a priest, a fireman, a cop, worked for the city, teamster, longshoreman, you were a punk. And that's what they classified me was a punk. They lied. When I was 14, I turned in to be a punk. What happened was I was a rebel. I ran away from home 3,000 times and all that bullshit and whatever, you know. And I had a very serious drinking problem when I was 16, 17. But I didn't want to quit. When I was 22 years old, I became the youngest college coach in the United States of America at the age of 22. Up the University of San Francisco, predominantly basketball school. And the attitude that I had with the Jesuit priest was they used to play a 15-20 game schedule in baseball. It's a basketball school. That's where Russell's dynasty got built. Okay? They were so religious that they were thrown out of NCAA for a couple of years. It's called rigorous dishonesty. But anyway, I go up there, and the first year I had a 45-game schedule, and the second year I had a 90-game schedule. Okay, and the father president called me into the office, and he wanted to know, and this is how it was. I shot from the hip back then, I shot from the hip now. This is how it was. He said, where are you getting all the money to put my clubs were the best dressed outside of Stanford on the West Coast. Where are you getting all this equipment? You know, I told him, well, you know what, I don't really think it's none of your business, Padre. I said, I don't tell you how to run your school, I hope you don't tell me how to run my baseball program. I says, when it starts costing you money, then call me on the carpet. Oh, he liked that when I told him it was going to cost him no yeetus. So what happened was we went into the season and we played a lot of baseball games. And about halfway through the season, a kid named Pete Garcia from Hawaii came into the locker room and he wanted to try out for the team. And I told him, well, the season's half over. You know, you can't just walk into this whatever. And he tells me, he said, you know, I don't tell you how to coach. I just want to try out for the team. I told him, son, you don't understand me. Get your ass out of the locker room. And he tried to tell me who his father was. I told him, I don't care who your father is or your mother. Get out of here. So about 2 hours later, and I said, by the way, if you expect to play baseball next year, get a haircut. So 2 hours later, I got called in the father president's office again. And he told me, do you know who you were talking to? And I said, no. He says, you know that science center we got built down here? It's called Harney Science Center. Well, Charles Harney, the guy that helped build Candlestick Park, he was a crook too. He owned those hills. As you go up 101 where it says Welcome to South San Francisco, he owned all those hills. He told everybody that he would dump the dirt in Candlestick for free. And when it cost enough, the parking lot's just shrunk. That's all they did. They're still stinking. But anyway, they got together and they built a science center that didn't cost the Jesuits no money. So the Jesuit priest calls me into the office and he tells me, I tell him, you know what? I'm running this baseball team. He said, no problem. And he asked me to leave, and I went and I coached 45, 50 more games, and the season was over. And 2 days later, he calls me in the office. I thought he was going to fire me. He gave me a raise in pay. He tripled my raise that I got 2 months before that. I was goddamn near making minimum wages. And then, guess what he did? He put me down in the basement counting rubber bands and paper clips. And I went to say something to him. He says, you told me that you don't tell me how to run your baseball team. You don't tell me what you got to do for your job description. He didn't fire me. And I didn't know anything about leveling it to pride or giving it up. So what happened was I told him what he could do with his job. And he was very grateful I was able to do that. And off I went. 2 days later, before I turned 23 years of age, I had a moment of clarity to talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I knew that I was going to die drunk. I didn't have anything going for me. By that time we were married, 3 or 4 years, and Bombs had a couple of children, was one on the way, and she was kept barefooted and pregnant for many, many years. And I went into the sewer for the next 17 and a half years. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, my wife at one time was worth pretty close to $4 million. I don't know if anybody knows San Francisco, but she owned 6 or 7 houses on Marina Boulevard. She owned the apartment house Marilyn Monroe and Joe DiMaggio lived in. She owned a lot of property. And she had a lot of prestige until she met me. And what happened was, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, we were thrown off our welfare because of fraud. And we didn't have 2 dimes to rub together. There's a man sitting in this room today from Modesto, California that's seen me on day one. And I don't want to forget that. See, I don't want to forget the morning I woke up or come out of a blackout or whatever and I couldn't put no shoes on. Hadn't had no shoes on for months. My feet were as wide as they're long. And I remember walking down the hall and running into one of my sons who that time, I guess, I don't know, he was 19 or something, and I asked him if he had any money. I had to go make a phone call. And he said, I got 3 cents left. Back then, phone calls were a dime. And I had 9 cents on me. I told Mike, I got to get another penny. He says, Pops, you robbed us of it all. And I tried to tell him about, you know, how Mom and everything like this. He said, Daddy, you did it. It was you, it wasn't us. And I walked out that door that morning, and it was probably the loneliest I've ever been in all the years I've been alive. See, what happened was, 3 days before I had that conversation with my wife and my children, I ended up at the welfare office in Milpitas. You know, and that wasn't degrading for me because I didn't give a shit then. Okay, I've been on in and out of welfare and off welfare and on welfare and food stamps and no food stamps and ripping and running. You know, and I used to drink at the Hilton. I know what it is to drink in some of the finest restaurant and bars in this country. I also know what it is to drink in some of the most degrading toilets on the east side in San Jose. I know what it is to drink in a shooting gallery that's infested by rats and shit that hasn't been cleaned for months and months and months. See, so I've been on both ends of the spectrum. That's why when I come into a room like this, and there's a lot of gusto put into how these tables are set up, and there's a lot of pride and dignity in set up, and how this thing started this morning, God damn it, you better appreciate it. The main reason I'm up here today, okay, is because what it says on the front of this booklet, a little thing about central office, helps support your central office. That's how I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Because the woman at the welfare department said to me, "Do you want to quit drinking?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "Have you ever tried to stop drinking?" I said, "No." She says, "You're lying." I said, "You're an asshole." You know? She says, "Do you want to go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting?" And I said, "Yes." "Where are they held at?" She says, "That's for you to find out." And she was about this big. And she had on a straight dress. She had on one of those fat collars. And she had those glasses on like she was looking through Coca-Cola bottles. She should have been a warden of a woman's joint. You know? And she sat in a big chair with a big, high, fat back. And I started to get up to leave because I asked her, "I need help." And she told me, "You got to find the help yourself." So I started to leave, and she told me, "You ain't leaving, sit down." I talked about her mama. So what happened was, I went out and did one more time what I know how to do for a long, long time. See, because when I came back my last year from playing professional baseball in 1959, my wife made a mistake in taking me for a long walk. The Marina Greens, the bocce ball court, all over North Beach. And I was hurting, Jack. I was out all night with the fellas. I just got through playing 7 months, 126 games of baseball. I'm in tremendous physical condition. And I went out that night with the fellas. Not her, the fellas. Okay? And I got loaded. And the next morning, all I wanted was a get-up. So she walked me. My tongue was in my shorts. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay? By the time we come down Chestnut Street, we pass by this place called the Anchorage Bar. And I told her, I gotta go in here and have something cold. She says, "Go ahead. No problem." When I went in there, I was on my way to the bathroom. I said, "Two double shots, two bottles of Coors." I went to the bathroom, I came back, drank the two Coors, had one more for the road, was out the door, and she took a look in my eyes. And from that moment, till 1981, my wife and later seven children have never seen me draw a sober and clean breath. To go to show you what type of an alcoholic I was, the first 22 years I was married, I was sitting home one day, and the phone rang. I had 4 or 5 years sober. I don't know what it was. And the phone rang, and it was the IRS. I said, "Oh, shit." You know what I mean? And they were interviewing my daughter, showing me my house for a job. But I was real worried, man, that they were after me. One of my kids who wasn't afraid of me at that time said, "Dad, what are you worried about? This is just the IRS." I didn't say nothing to him. He said, "Dad, you don't have to worry anyway. You never worked." It's the truth. I'm not proud of it to this moment. Okay, you're looking at an alcoholic that used to have be troubled coming to meetings, okay, 5 and 6 meetings a day for 5 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay, and let me give the newcomer or the person in here today that's hurting an out. If you hear anything this morning at 10 o'clock meeting, the meeting that Pamela spoke at, or this one here, or the one Eileen takes us down the freeway in tonight, if you hear anything that bothers you, talk to someone. Talk to someone. Don't leave this property beforehand. Don't listen to what I'm saying. Listen to the message. See? God bless you. Listen to the message. See, that's what you do here. That's sort of how I was raised here. Okay? And so what happened was, where was I at? Shit, I forgot. Yeah, the RRS, Red Army. Ain't no shame in my game. Anyway, RRS. Me and my children can laugh about those things today. You know, and all the trouble at meetings. So I go to one more meeting and I heard somebody say, and it meant well. Everybody means well. You can't make no mistake from this podium. You can't make no mistake in an open chair meeting. Okay? I don't believe so. Okay? So anyway, what happened was I heard that you'd not be able to stay here until you learn how to reach out your hand for help. I said, Jesus Christ, I'm gone. I gotta go drink. I gotta do something that I know how to do comfortably. Okay? But I remember telling you that I was a failure as a father, a provider, a baseball coach. I was a failure at everything, and then 3 years into sobriety, I had to tell you that I was a failure as a drunk. I don't know if there's anybody in here that can cop to that fact. I think there is. I got a little sneaky suspicion that there is. There was no such thing as sitting in a bar and a bartender comes. Oh, that's enough, Holmes. You know what I mean? You know? The bartender came by. Oh, Louie, he bought you one. Or Betsy. No, I'll tell her I passed. I got to go to the PTA meeting. That's bullshit. You know, there was none of that. I drank. I didn't drink light beer. I drank. I drank hard. Alcohol kicked my ass. Alcohol burned my family to the goddamn ground. See? My whole family is grateful I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. Can you imagine? And I don't know all of you, but I do know all of you. Okay? Let me tell you something. If we were to take every human being that's in this room this afternoon at 25 minutes to 4, now check this out. I know a lot of people are grateful we're here. Okay? Let me tell you another organization that's grateful we're here. Okay? If you took all of us that's in this room right now, and you would have put us out here in this boulevard or this park and say, Holmes, do exactly what you used to do for 30 seconds when you were out there. You see that building across the street? The National Guard couldn't hold us. See, you got some insane fools in here. Okay? Who in a spiritual axiom are the kindest living people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sure that the people who did all this work here this weekend weren't ex-priests and ex-nuns. Shit. You know, I even probably think that some of you, know, did a little time. You know? Used and abused drugs and alcohol. See, look what I can walk into this morning. I'm overpaid. I'm overpaid. I don't have any more rights. None. In the last year, I have no rights. Every breath of fresh air that comes in and out of my body, everything that I do today in life, for the last year and a month, for the first 11 and a half years I was sober, I took a lot of goddamn things for granted. I can honestly stand here before you today and tell you within the last year and 2 days, I've taken nothing for granted. Nothing. I have no more rights. I have privileges. It's a privilege to be in Lodi, California. See, what happened was, I woke up a year ago, a little over a year ago, and Mom's wasn't doing too good. She ended up in the hospital with cancer. They cut her from head to foot. She wasn't supposed to make 11 hours on the operating table. She had a surgery that there's only been 4 people known to the history of medical science. It's been confirmed and documented that has ever met it off the table. A year later, she went back in and got cut from side to side. Let me tell you about the power of prayer. They held my wife up in prayer in Monterey, New Mexico. 11 Al-Anons. Still got good hands. 24-hour prayer vigil. The Jesuit priest that I used to hate prayed for my wife on the roof of Santa Clara University. We got phone calls last week from Washington, from Canada, from New Mexico, from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I could go on and on and on. Everybody in my family was at Valley Medical Center. And I wasn't no hip, slick, and cool alcoholic, dope fiend, overeater, compulsive gambler when I was out there. I was an asshole. I was a chicken shit wannabe. That's how I was. That's who I was. I didn't stick a piece in nobody's face. I didn't rob no grocery stores. I didn't burn nobody. except for the first 22 and a half years of marriage. I burned my family right to the ground, man. I robbed for my kids. See, I robbed for my wife, and I beat them. For 22 and a half years of marriage. My wife's sitting in this room today. When we held hands and said a few prayers this morning, she took her thumb, because that's what the book says, to pray together. She took her thumb and rubbed it on my wedding band. It's not my wedding band. This wedding band belongs to Alcoholics Anonymous. See, because 3 weeks from today, we'll be celebrating a wedding anniversary and the amount of time I have received in Alcoholics Anonymous. See? 12 years clean and sober by the grace of God, with God's help, and 33 years married. See? That's incredible. See? That's all Alcoholics Anonymous. They ain't me. Let me tell you about my children now. See, I have one son, that boy that met me in the hallway, who's a scrawny little goddamn kid because I robbed him from the opportunity to eat him. Let me tell you where he's at 12 years later. He leaves for Canada 2 days before his papa's birthday, and he fights for the heavyweight championship of the world. He holds 2 world titles in martial arts. Let me tell you about the kid who called me this morning who used to come to the Atlanta Club with a goddamn gun. Bobby remembers. To shoot me. He's 6'5", 265 and a half. That's the same kid that came to Alcoholics Anonymous with a greasy t-shirt and a funky pair of Levi's. Now he has his own tractor and trailer. He's an awesome father. See? He's a good provider. He does a hell of a job. Why? Alcoholics Anonymous. My 2 granddaughters called me this morning and called me Grandpa. Christ Almighty. If that's all I get a chance to take to bed, lay on the pillow tonight with, I'm overpaid. Overpaid. My daughter called me. And this is a barn burner. She's joined the fold. A week ago, she sat behind me in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. We were packing the 2 cars this morning outside my house. 4 women, a 12-year-old teenager, and Grandpa Dan. And my daughter came walking down the street, and she was about a half hour from going to her first 12-step meeting. There's too much power here. Call it what you want. There's too much power. San Jose Police Department, where we used to live at. See, because I live with my daughter now. All my furniture's in storage. I got pulled out of service on March 2nd and retired 100% because I got problems with my heart. We got mixed up into unemployment and disability and all of that stuff because all I did was drink. Pamela taught me what to do. I'm not ashamed to admit that in a room full of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank all the women that are sitting in here today. See? All the women. That's you guys. And I'll tell you why. The women in Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, Al-Anon, Zealon, and all that other stuff taught me how to talk to my wife and 2 daughters. Because I used to call, it's my old lady. They said, what? You're an asshole, man. How long have you been sober? Is that your wife? Is that your wife? I said, yeah. Well, what's your name? It's Madeline. See, that's what she called her, doesn't he? What's your 2 daughters' name? Well, Eileen and Kathy. That's what you call them. Hey, my old lady. See, you know, God don't have no stepkids. So what happened was, I continued on this journey. But we didn't have any monies coming in for a couple of months. Let me tell you who came by my house and gave me cigarette change and walk-around change and paid my storage fee. My children. Is that heavy? Okay. Who paid our insurances? My children. who made sure we were taking care of my children. But see, there's a spiritual action there. They're no longer my children. It took me 10 years to learn how to look at them through a different pair of glasses. They're on loan to me. And the only thing that's happening is I just become aware quicker today. That's all I do. You know? And I'm overpaid. It's a privilege to go anywhere. See, I don't belong out there. See, I used to do a lot of drinking in Lodi. Cal Vets home in Yountville. Okay? Sacramento. But I used to bring all my ball clubs up here. I don't know what them kids did at night because they didn't know what I did either. You know, it's few and partied, but I had a rule on my ball club. Just like I did when I was in professional baseball, and just like I did when I was in college. The bar that I stay at's mine. You find your own. You know, I thought that was a pretty good rule. You know. So that's why when I get up in the morning, I go right. I don't take this thing for granted. See? I went to bed last night after I said my prayers. And for some reason, I left the phone on in the living room, which it always stays on. And I left the phone on in the bedroom, but I turned the clicker up. Because I just had that sixth sense that the phone was going to ring. And what happened was, a woman who lives in Oregon, well, I watched her down on Saturday Night Live go through the death of her child in a crib death. And I watched her go through it with more pride and dignity and gusto of any person I've ever seen. Didn't take nothing and moved to Oregon. Later on, she got a divorce. And yesterday afternoon, she got a phone call from the coroner's office in Santa Clara saying that they just found her mother with a spike in her arm. So the people in Alcoholics Anonymous in Medford, Oregon, stayed with her, put her on a plane this morning, paid the fare of another woman to come down with her. She got picked up at the airport by her dad, okay? And her dad was taking her straight home, and a couple of guys that I sponsored, some of the women, are waiting for her at her house. And if everything works out, she's going to be in Lodi, California tonight. See? That's what's happening, man. That's all. You know, you're looking at a drunk. You know, I tell the people I sponsor, don't put me on a pedestal. And everybody got clay feet. Mine just happened to be 14 4Es. You put the message on a pedestal. That's what you do. If I check my heritage out through my sponsor, and I'm here to tell you, okay, that if you don't have a sponsor, and if you're anywhere in and around the second step of Alcoholics Anonymous, you might as well kiss yourself and you ask goodbye. Period. That's how I was raised, by guys with 47 years sober, down to the person who just came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was at a meeting with him last night. No, that's not true. I was sitting outside the Alana Club. I didn't go inside to a meeting. So I can't even live good anymore. And I met somebody that was embarking on their first date. See? This thing's priceless. I've had the same sponsor from the day I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. The definition of my sponsor, he knows everything about me and still loves me. He's told me one time, on 12 years and another couple of weeks, what to do. Once. One time. He's always led by an example. He's always had time for me. In 1985, I'm at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting just like this. Just like today, some lady asked me, can I go out and get her some sweet and low? I said, yeah. Because the book says I got to be a good Samaritan every day if need be. You know, maybe sometimes not too graciously, but need be. I went out and got her some sweet and low, and out of the corner of my eye, I seen a couple of my children sit at the counter with my wife. And one of the guys that come out of the bathroom, 6'5", about 250, good-looking, strawberry blonde kid. Had a little beard. He gave me a hug and a kiss, and I told him, Holmes, you got to get a shave. He says, Pops, I just delivered 27 yards of towel today. He says, I'm dying. He says, I just want some liquid. I said, well, go to the counter. Mom will help you. It's my son, Stevie. 6 o'clock that morning, me and my wife got through separating our hands, praying together, and a phone rang. One of the guys I sponsored named Aaron told me that Stevie just passed away. 21 years old, 3.5 months clean and sober. I was on a Friday, and I was the secretary of the Saturday Night Speakers meeting on the east side. My friend Paz told me I'll take care of the family. You go to your meeting. After the meeting was over, sitting outside, and somebody came running out and told me, my wife said her brother just shot dope and died. We went to the funeral on Monday. Within a couple of days, my papa passed away in my arms. Either that weekend, or it's kind of still foggy, the following week, my sister Bernadette overdosed and died from medication. On the way home from San Francisco, my daughter got assaulted on the east side. All within a period of 12 days in Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't find it necessary to take nothing. And sometimes, God damn it, I wish I could take this much of credit. Just give me a nickel's worth. You know what I mean? Give me just a tad, man. I mean, look at me. I don't look like no alcoholic. People from Lodi look like alcoholics. You know what I mean? But I don't look like no alcoholic. You know what I mean? I stole that from one of the circus people. You know? I can't take any credit. I got through telling you how I looked when I got here and didn't have anything going for me. I mean, nothing. This is the greatest life I've ever experienced. I've been on both sides of the fence. See, in 1968, I kicked the last woman friend out of my wife's. Never had a woman friend till 1981. None. She didn't have no friends except 7 children and a goddamn drunken fool. No wonder she's in the other program. You know, call Our Lady perpetual guilt. Shit. And we joke about that. She's about 11th degree black belt in Al-Anon. She couldn't sponsor me. Because I don't think I could follow her direction. Her direction's cut and dry. There's no bullshit. And me and Mom, we joke about that. It took me 6 or 7 years in Alcoholics Anonymous to learn how to joke with my wife. She knows when to get correct with me. Like, shut up, punk, and go to a meeting. That don't happen too often. Yeah, that don't happen too often. My wife's sitting in this room today, this afternoon. That gasses me. That thrills me to death. It's a privilege to have my wife in here. It's a privilege to have 2 of my children embarking on the 12 steps. It's a privilege to have 2 of my other family members kicking off the Cinco de Mayo marathon at the Alana Club of San Jose. You know, the same place I sobered up. Okay, I'm talking about there has to be rooms for everybody. Okay? I'm spoiled. I don't know if you're spoiled. I'm spoiled. I'm not used to this in a small town. Okay? I'm used to it, a little bit of this at a convention. Okay? I'm not used to going to Modesto, California. They spoil the shit out of me in Modesto. You know, they take care of the O'Connors in Modesto. They treat me like kings, man. I'm not used to that. I don't know how to act yet. See? But I'm learning. See? It took me 9 or 10 years to go into a restaurant and to learn how to enjoy a birthday dinner or a birthday lunch. See? My wife's got more men friends and more women friends now than I'll ever have. One of the guys that stayed in my house, and we caught a lot of flack for it when I had 6 or 7 months, was a guy named Big Daddy Vince. Big Daddy Vince just celebrated 17 years. Big Daddy Vince is 59 years old, going on about 32. Big Daddy Vince got 23-inch arms. Big Daddy Vince spent 36 and a half years in a penitentiary. My children taught him how to eat.
at 12 years sober, used to pick up all the food with his hands. He'd never been to a meal in anybody's home until he walked in our house. He didn't know what silverware was. And he used to tell me, "Danny, go to all the meetings you want. Stay at the Alana Club. I'll take care of your family." I allowed my daughters and my wife to sleep in the same house that man did, and felt the safest I've ever felt since the day I became an Alcoholics Anonymous. See, I am who I run with. See, I don't want to forget once where I came from. See, I'll be the first one to tell you that poverty sucks. First one to tell you that poverty sucks. You know, I mean, shit, look at me. You know, from 518 pounds, excuse me, you know what I mean? Christ's sake. You know, I got a lot of shrinkage done already, and the doctors think I'm going to stay retired. They're wrong. Because God's got something in store for me. You know, special. See, and you know what the special thing is? It's the same thing you have. It's the same thing I beg you to take to bed tonight. It's the same thing I beg whatever you hear today, right, wrong, or different, to take it to bed tonight and hold it close to your heart. Because this gift that I have may never pass this way again. See, I know what it is to sit down at the table and break bread with people. See, I know what it is to hug somebody in a Lano Club. Okay? I know what it is to invite people over into my home. I know what it is to be invited to their home. Not too many times because I'm still scared. See, I don't know how to sit on people's patios and do barbecues, but I'm learning. See, I don't know what it is to sit in a restaurant, man, with 12 years sober almost, and enjoy my wife and my lady friends and a 12-year-old kid. They're teaching me. I'm not ashamed to admit that. I'm not ashamed to come here to Lodi, California to tell you that I've hit an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Not ashamed at all. Because I just shared it with you. You know what? I'm not afraid of that anymore. I'm not afraid to go into a restaurant most of the time. I don't want to put this thing on. What do you call it? Boutique or whatever? I don't know what it is. Shit. Lindy told Pamela something. I said, "I ain't wearing one of them things." Shit. "Are you crazy?" She said, "Well, it ain't Saturday yet." "But I ain't wearing one. If she asked me to put it on, I ain't wearing it." Because I was scared. Well, look what I got on. You know. She says, "Where should I paint it?" I said, "Paint it where we're here. Just stick it there or something." You know. I'm not willing to share, some of my insecurities. See? Because if I don't, okay, I talk about things that a lot of people won't talk about. I write inventories continuously. I live by the 9 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have recovered. I have been given the power to carry the message. And I'm bottom of page 132. The only thing I've done perfect since May 22nd, 1981 is I haven't taken a fixed pill of drink. See? That's all I've done perfect. Everything else has changed. That's the only thing that hasn't changed since my sobriety birthday. That's what the long-timers taught me. That's what the long-timers asked me to do. I don't talk about leaving 5 minutes before the miracle. What are you talking about, 7 yards? Shit, 5 minutes before what miracle? Then I went to one more meeting. And I heard a woman named Sylvia, who's coming up in 32 years, the same day I celebrate 12. Said, "If there's somebody sitting in this room tonight seeking something or searching for something, you found it. You don't have to go nowhere else. You found it. You've got it. You've got the miracle. The question is, I want to ask you, what do you want to do with it? What do you want to do with the miracle, Danny? Are you willing to go to any lengths? I know you had your eyes set on going to Lodi and maybe, you know, chilling in the pool and in the hot tub and, you know, laying in your room and, you know, with the air conditioner fired up and just got through eating a nice dinner and firing up a Marlboro with my feet up on the bed saying how rough sobriety is. Shit. You know what I mean? Until I received that phone call See, and I don't know if I'm going to have to leave in between my meal. It's not important. My wife that's in this room today that I've known for 37 years, that I've been married to for 33 years, does not come first. And she knows that. My 7 children and 4 or 5 grandchildren do not come first. My sobriety comes first. Because if I don't have it, I won't have anything that I mentioned to you anyway. And my wife knows that. My wife knows that. You know, a lot of people talk about, you know, the steps, and we take these steps, and we take the 3rd step, and we take the 7th step, and we do the 11th step. You know, nobody talks about the marriage vows. Talk a lot about relationships and shit. You don't hear nothing about a marriage vows in Alcoholics Anonymous. God ain't no pimp. See? That's what this program's taught me, not to violate my marriage vows. And I haven't violated my marriage vows since I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. See? Talks about on page 70. See, there's 2 things I can't do here. That's one interrupting my sobriety and one interrupting your sobriety. That's called a cardinal sin. See? And if I do it, or if somebody that I sponsor does it, I know how to get them out of it. Because I was taught how to get out of it. You take them through the steps, and then the final touch is the amends step. And my friend told me, "You mean I got to go make an amends to my wife for cheating on her?" I told him, "No, dummy, shut up. And listen, fool." Because I continue to hear a lot of 5th steps. He said, "Well, how do I make an amends to her, man? I sit on the side of the bed in my night and I cringe inside. I'm scared to look at my 2 daughters, man. We've been married a long time, Holmes. So let me tell you how you're going to make an amends for her. You don't do it anymore. Here's 15 cards. When you get through giving out these 15, come back and I'll give you 15 more. And you better come get 15 every goddamn day, because my foot will be in your ass. And you give those cards out to a newcomer." See? There's no way, okay, that I can justify what I just shared with you and be working as a newcomer at the same time. See? And that's why I talk freely about relationships and sex from the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. People say, "Well, you shouldn't talk about it." They're crazy. It's part of my inventory. It's part of what's written in the book, which is the only authority. This one here. This book. It's the only thing I own. This is mine. This ain't yours. This is mine. Okay, mine, mine, mine. It's not yours. It's mine. See? And there's 13,000 ways of writing a 4-step inventory. They even sell them now out of Los Angeles for $1.75. So I want the people in Lodi to be aware. You know, they'll jack it up to $2 when they get here. Resentments, fears, faults, and sex. And if all 4 of those ain't cleaned up, and you don't read them to somebody, and they become vulnerable like me, and get put back together through the 6th and 7th step by a sponsor who's been here for years and years and years, and then the 8th step comes from the 4th step you just wrote, and then you start embarking on the amends. Let me ask you a question without raising any hands. And I mean this from my heart. Because I was a pallbearer at a funeral because this guy wouldn't take no direction. Ask yourself a question. How many people have you seen, men and women both, in and out of relationships since they came to Alcoholics Anonymous? Don't raise no hands. Ask yourself that question. I'm going to tell you the reason why. Because the one you just got out of hasn't been cleaned up. And you haven't healed. And you can take that to the goddamn bank. Ask yourself a question. If you jump from woman to woman to woman, or if you're a woman and you jump from man to man to man, and all of a sudden, we move, I got him again. or, and I got her again, different pad, okay, and then 2 or 3 months later, or 2 or 3 years later, okay, they're all fucked up again. See? Don't believe me, believe the goddamn book. You think myself and my wife's marriage came together the first 5 or 6 years we were sober? We're still working on it. Okay, you know that it says in the book, the toughest place to live this program is in your home? That's what the book says? I'm here to tell you for the last 2.5 years it's been, I wish my whole life could be constructed at home. That's become the easiest place to even live this program. Because of what you did for me. Why should I do the 4 step, exactly how it's written in the book, resentment list, then the fear list, then the fault list, and then don't do nothing else? Why should I take the first 3 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous like it's prescribed in the book, and then I believe some fool, I buy some package? See, that's what the long-timers told me. Keep it simple, dummy. Do it by the book. See, because when I start writing those reams and reams of garbage, they run into one another. Does that sound familiar? See, I don't read anything I write. You know? We've been through a lot of trauma and tragedy since I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I quit asking why most of the time, and I quit trying to understand it most of the time. I go to meetings every day to get in touch with my emotions. See, I don't know what's going to happen when I walk out that door. I don't know if that red light's going to be blinking on a telephone when we go back to the hotel. See? I come home from an Alcoholics Anonymous one meeting one night, and my wife says, well, Mark's in the hospital. Got hit by a truck in Alvin Expressway, who was in the hospital for over 4 months. Went through about 27 surgeries. Me and my wife and children were never left alone 24 hours around the clock for 4 calendar months. There was meetings in that hospital at 2 in the morning, 11 at night. There was meetings all around the clock. See? That's where I'm at. One drunk helping another drunk not to take a drink today. See, anything else after that is a plus. You know? I mean, there's no smoking in my room at the Holiday Inn. It says no smoking. So I called downstairs and I told the woman, and she says, well, it's non-smoking. It's exactly what the sign says. She says, do you have a patio? I said, excuse me, we do. She says, smoke on a patio. I said, no problem. I know how to disconnect the goddamn smoke alarm. You should throw beer bottles at them. When it worked. So I obeyed the thing at the Holiday Inn. See? My wife's safe with me. See? People I run with are safe with me. I wasn't a bad, hard-nosed street dude when I was out there. I was an animal. That's what alcohol allowed me to become. Alcoholics Anonymous. See, I live with a lot of energy wherever I go from the podium. I pour my heart, gut, mind, and soul into it. I'm soaking wet right now. Okay? Because when I leave here, okay, and somebody said something to me at the bottom of these stairs here, not outside, not on the freeway, at the bottom of these stairs, I can treat them like a decent human being. See? A lot of times it's not what I am, it's what I'm trying to become. My children feel real safe with me. They bring most of their problems hardly because of disappointments to me and Mama. Be careful what you pray for. Shit, I got sober and they all came back. Very sick. They all, and then some. You know, you stay here long enough and you get a lot of friends. And then you stay around here a while longer, you get a lot of friends. And then you stay around here and you make the commitment, you get people to become part of you. I got family sitting in this room today. Okay, and I'm not talking about my wife. And I'm talking about my wife. I'm talking about there's a lot of O'Connors sitting in this room today, man. People that are responsible. for me being here. A lot of people don't want to hear that. There's people sitting in here today, I'm talking about women with, I don't know, 32, 34 days, 2 months sober, they're responsible for me being here. And their children. See? I could not understand for the life of me why single parents, men and women, could come to Alcoholics Anonymous, get sober, stay sober, go to work for a living, okay, pay the bills, have a little car, okay, have some pretty clean threads, okay, go to meetings, be sponsored, and sponsor a lot of people. Blew my mind. It still does. And I could not understand why they were attracted to me. For years. And all of a sudden one day I woke up and I was praying on my couch. And I said, oh my God. Now, 9.5, 10 years sober in a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I finally woke up and in every fiber of my body found out what a really, really, really wonderful woman I was married to. And for all those years I ripped and ran and burned every goddamn bridge that I possibly could, she took care of my children. And she took care of me. This time last year, April, the first time I ever walked into my house in 33 years and seen dust on my furniture. It's the first time I ever walked into my house and opened up the icebox and seen this much milk without two backups. It's the very first time I ever walked into my house and seen open up the sandwich box or the meat box and didn't see no Italian salami and cheese and whatever else is in there. Okay? First time I ever walked into the laundry room and seen dirty clothes. I've never walked into my kitchen and seen dishes in my sink. Dirty. Last April I did. Because a hammer came down on Mom's. You know what I did this week? I cleaned the shit house. I did the dishes. I vacuumed the pad. I made dinner. I had pasta grown at 4 o'clock in the morning. Only because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I told Mom, just tell me what ingredients to put in here so I don't poison nobody. I had a hot dog the other day. It's probably for the first time in my life being 53 and a half years of age. See, I love hot dogs. Don't close the grill on me, Holmes. You know what I'm saying? I love hot dogs, okay? And I like it with relish and mustard on it. And the other day, I had a hot dog and I didn't have no relish or mustard. It's probably the first time in years I didn't piss or moan or complain. See, so you ain't looking at no virgin. You're looking at a man that says please in the morning and thank you at night every goddamn day since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got a lady friend that lives in Casagrande, Arizona, Barbara Murphy. And I asked her, what do you say between please and thank you? She says, Dan, you've been doing it for over 4 years. I said, what is it? She says, you holler help all day long. I don't want to drink anymore. My wife don't want to see me drink anymore. My children don't want to see me drink anymore. And I'll tell you why. Because when I drink, I can't guarantee my behavior. Everything that I did yesterday afforded me to go to bed last night clean and sober. Everything that I do today affords me not to take something today. And I don't know, I'm in a local AIDS gang here, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, and I don't know, 6 years ago, that's when Detroit was involved in a World Series, and Billy Martin hadn't died yet of an insidious disease that I have. They have AA meetings in every clubhouse in the major leagues except Oakland, because Billy was managing that club. And I never want to forget this. Bases loaded. Alex Trammell, Alan Trammell, a shortstop for Detroit, hit a triple off the left center field scoreboard. So I come up out of my seat and I'm into it, you know, watching a cutoff and a relay and who's lining who up and this guy scores and that guy scores and this guy scores. And out of the corner of my eye, I watched the third base coach picking up the guy coming around third, and he's holding him up, and he went right through the stop sign. See, and then they got him in a hot box. And finally, they tagged him out. And my friend who's sitting next to me said, pass it on. This cup is small compared to the cup I had in my hand. One of those big ballpark cups. And the foam was coming down. And it was going down my arm. And my hand stayed right there. Because then and only then did I understand when it talks about in the book, there'll come a time in every alcoholic's life where the only thing separating you from the next drink as you understand them is God as you understand them. And if you don't have them, you're history. And I passed it on. I had it in my hand. See? I asked my friend 2 days later, 3 days later, the question was weighing on my mind. How long did I have that beer in my hand, Don? He says, right before Trammell hit the pitch off the top of the scoreboard. Now, 3 runs scored. And they get him in the hot box, so I don't know how long that happened. You know, I may go home tonight and say it took 2 months or something, you know what I mean? It maybe took 40 seconds. I don't know how long it was. I've never held a beer in my hand or a drink in my life. In my entire life. For longer than 5 seconds. See, because I was always pissed off. I look at this Pepsi. I don't piss the moment that it's half empty. I'm grateful there's something in there. Because when I get down here, I'm going to re-up on about 2 6-packs. Because I get dehydrated. I'm going to drink the shit out of something. See? So I don't end up getting dehydrated. See? You may want to think, well, what's that got to do with Alcoholics Anonymous? Got everything to do. Learn how to take care of your body. That's the first time I sat out here in the sun today. Low back. Oh, my God, I ain't up here in August. Holy shit. You know. Oh, my God. You wake up, it's 100. That's why I had a drink when I was in low back. It was hot. Air conditioning on. Turning purple drinking. So when you leave here in a couple minutes, because I ain't going to run it to 4:30, I'm out of gas. But I used to sit out here like I did today, and I started getting warm. I'm starting to finally learn how to come in out of the heat. And I'd sit out there all day long or whatever and sacrifice my body, okay? And then go to one of these meetings and listen to somebody speak, and then you wouldn't see me for a week. I'd be stuck in my home group. I couldn't make it back to Lodi if they were giving everything away free. You know? So, you know, when I leave here, you know, I want to thank Lindy and everybody here in Lodi, California. You know, you've helped me maintain. There's a pretty good chance I won't drink until I go to the rest of the day. Because there's a page in his book that there's a few pages that don't have numbers on it. And it talks about the long-timers with 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, and 40 years guarantee me that I don't have to take another drink. But there's a hook to everything. There's a hook. And a woman named Pat, she put her hand on my chest. She told me, Danny, you got it. Stay here long enough for it to come out. She says, you don't ever have to go back. And she stepped back and she threw the hook. And it's the hook that got me. She says, and you'll never have to be alone again, baby, one day at a time, the rest of your natural born life. See, everything that I share with you today, okay, how I open my grapes in the morning, how I put the coffee on, how I start my prayers out, the first three or four things that I do, I learn from a man named Paz. Yeah. The last page that I read every time I speak or share a meeting is page 312, The Keys of the Kingdom. Because Taz did it. You know, the chapter 5, it says it. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our paths. I've had homeless people. People living in shelters. People living on a goddamn street. Come to the closed men's meeting on Wednesday night. That I always go to. I think I missed it 2 times in almost 12 years. And left some vegetables and some pasta and some cut up chicken and a couple of turkeys. So the alcoholic and the junkies at the Alana Club could have some type of a Christmas dinner. I don't know where they got it. See? You think that I have it bad? We're sitting at Valley Medical Center. We're out on the patio and all my boys are clowning one another. And my lady friend Jennifer was there and Pamela came from her job. And oh, Christ, my wife came home with tons of flowers. And we're sitting on the patio and we look across and there's the jail ward, the AIDS ward, and the cancer ward. And there's a lot of men and women in the cancer ward and AIDS ward that ain't coming home. They're not going to be able to go to the Holiday Inn tonight, man, and soak in a goddamn jacuzzi. See, they can't come to Lodi, California, and enjoy what we have. See, they can't. And this young kid, good-looking kid, about 30 years old, every 5 or 10 minutes he'd come out of the patio to have a cigarette with one of his partners. Every, like clockwork. First 2 hours, I don't know how many times, out there 10 times. So finally we said, you know what? Come on, let me give us our papal blessing. Become our family. Get over here, shit. One of my boys got up and got his wheelchair. Had a cigarette with us. Went back to his room. We didn't see him for about 40 minutes. I told one of my boys, one of the guys I sponsored, Lenny. I'm worried about the kids. He came back on the patio that afternoon, that morning. And he went back to the ward, to the AIDS ward. And whoever could walk, or whoever could get pushed, went into the shit house and said the rosary for my wife. The other kid says, I've been here 17 months. He says, you want to know anything about your wife? Come see me. I know all the doctors, all the nurses, all the back doors and the front doors, janitors, suppliers. He says, I know everybody. If you're not satisfied getting information about your wife, come to me. I'll get it. I'm overpaid. I'm overpaid. See, I went to a funeral a couple of weeks ago. See, I talk about that shit in my talks now. Page 312, it goes like this. The last 15 years of my life have been rich and meaningful. I've had my share of problems, heartaches, and disappointments because that is life. But also I've known a great deal of joy and is a peace that is handmade of inner freedom. I have a wealth of friends with my AA friends and usually quality of fellowship. For these people I'm truly related. First through mutual pain and despair, and later through mutual objectives and a newfound faith and hope. And as the years go by working together, sharing our experiences with one another, and also sharing mutual trust, understanding, and love. Without strings, without obligation, we acquire relationships that are unique and priceless. There is no more loneliness without awful ache, so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach it. That ache is gone and never needs to return again. Now there's... Now there's a sense of belonging, of being wanted and needs and loved. In return for bottle and a hangover, we have been given the keys of the kingdom. Please, in the name of God, don't ever walk behind me. Please, in the name of God, don't ever walk in front of me. But please continue to hold my hand in the hands of people that have came before you and after you, and help them maintain another day of sobriety. Thank you very much. God bless you and have a tremendous day.